Welcome again to Cottage Talk Extra Time. I'm Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today will be David Hulley. In this episode, we will be discussing the embarrassing 4-1 loss performed against Brentford at Craven Cottage yesterday. Before we go any further, I have to start with welcoming my co-host back to the show. David, how are you doing, my friend? How's your Saturday?
Hiya, well, I've got it out of my system a bit by rearranging the shed today. It was a long overdue job, loads of boxes and stuff. Now we've got twice as much space in there as we had before. So, yeah, use my energy in a kind of a positive way, I suppose. It's good to sort of spend some time in the solitude and reflect over what we saw yesterday, of course, or today in your case. Just
sure.
A surprise that no one else wants to come on and have a rant about it, really, because it obviously is very disappointing that we lost to our local rivals. Not totally unexpected, I think, but disappointing nevertheless. But, you know, there were some positives to take out the game, so we can try and find them anyway in the next hour or so.
Well, listen, there are positives to take out of it, but we have to start and end with the result. The results are what ultimately count, and that was a 4-1 loss. And, you know, again, we're going to talk about some good things, of course, because, again, there are some things to take out of it that are positive, David. But the bottom line is, like you just mentioned, you lose in a derby match, and you lose 4-1. Now, is it flattering? There are two ways to look at that, and I'll get your thoughts on that, because, again, if you look at the stats, it looks pretty even. The big difference is, and I heard Kit say this on the BBC radio, that basically, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, it's about one side scoring and the other not. They took advantage of their opportunities, and they scored, and you have to give Brentford all the credit in the world. Is it a little flattering? Well, I guess you could say a little bit because they scored two at the very end of the match when it really, you know, again, 3-1 puts the match away. 4-1, it doesn't really matter at that point. But they're all very well-taken goals. So you have to give them credit there. But the stats say it was even, but, you know, the better team on this day won. David, that's the bottom line. You know, again, one team took advantage of their opportunities, another team did not, and that's why you have a 4-1 loss. Those are my thoughts. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think, you know, at 90 minutes when it was 2-1, had it ended like that, you could take that. You could say, you know, we've lost a close game to a team that's been doing well this year. Okay, it's not, we don't want to lose, but it's not embarrassing as such. The problem was, obviously, for the last 10 minutes, I think, we were playing with 10 men, basically, because Bodiroff was injured and he couldn't
run.
So, in some ways, they would have almost been better to take him off and just rearrange it somehow or send him away, because by having him there, he was trying to do a job defensively and he wasn't doing it. Had they sort of taken him off or put him up front out of the way just to kind of try and get on the end of a knockdown or something, maybe, and you know, I don't know, Hoogland or somewhere else go back there to play as a third central defender, I don't know. They may have, second central defender. It might have actually worked better, but, you know, it's by the by. There was a bit of strange substitutions again, and perhaps they could have saved one back. Had they saved one back, they wouldn't have been in that situation. We've got to see Dan Byrne to play. I mean, maybe we will get to see Dan Byrne to play now on Tuesday, of course, because Hutchison's still out, of course, and they've shipped Amar Bieta off and Bodiroff off. Well, we don't know what it's like, but it's going to be hard for him to be fit. But, yeah, I mean, we had Dan Byrne on the bench, but we'd used our subs up. So, yeah, that made a difference in the last 10 minutes. We were obviously at 2-1, we were chasing the game effectively with 10 men, and you know, they punished us for it. And, that, you know, at least we were trying to go for it. And, you know, in the overall scheme of the match, we looked a lot better once they brought Matt Smith on, I thought we would certainly cause them more problems. You said better is a, you know, people may say
relative
they don't like that style of football, but I think we certainly looked more dangerous when Matt Smith was on.
That's
and,
a good
you know,
word
and we
use.
Did have,
yeah.
Yeah, we did have chances, you know, we did have certainly had chances all throughout the match. When you look at, if you watch the 2-minute replay, of course, on the Fulham website, it actually does make it look as if, you know, obviously Brentford had very little apart from their four goals, and yet we were quite creative, but we didn't test their goalkeeper enough again. It was the same situation. And it wasn't just about your finishing. It was about the final ball. And they used the final wall better, and their shooting was better. And we faffed around with it again. And I saw Mike Gregg, I think it was, put on Twitter about in the UK here we have a store called B&Q. There's a DIY shop where you go and buy your stuff when you want to paint your garden fence and things like that. Yeah. And they've announced that they're shutting down. They're shutting 60 stores down. And Mike Gregg said very aptly, I think B&Q can shut their stores down quicker than we can shut their attacks down or something, because we just stood off them and then we let them run at us and attack, which we'll talk about in the formation in a minute. But that was the difference and that's what annoyed me by what Kit said, really. Kit said something about we work really hard or something like that.
He actually did say that, David.
He worked our socks off, but we didn't, because if we'd have worked our socks off, for me, we would have been closing them down. Maybe we would have been flying into tackles a bit more. Once again, no yellow cards. Now, I'm not advocating, you know, bad play, dangerous play, but in a local derby match, a match we need to be trying to win, perhaps there was a bit of, commitment lacking there. I would have taken a couple of yellow cards if it meant the guys were kind of diving in to try and block the ball, not diving in to hurt opponents, but, you know, to stop the ball a bit more. The sort of thing we see from Scott Parker.
Right.
You know, and we said on the previous show, myself and Mike both said Scott was the key player. And I still believe he would have been, because that's what we missed in the middle there.
I'm glad that you brought up commitment. And I heard what Kit said about that the players worked their socks off. And I see what he's saying, some of it, but again, both of these goals, this is the counter to this. Both of those goals, Dallas had a ton of room. He had a ton of room, but they did not close down well enough on both of those goals. Very well taken goals. Have to give Dallas credit for both of those goals, David. But I also have to put some fault on Fulham for not closing him down. And I think that's what you're getting at, David. Is that correct?
Certainly. I mean, talk about Dallas, you know. It could have been Los Angeles, and they still wouldn't have closed him down, really, I think. It was that big a gap. Not good enough. Yes, he did strike
the ball.
No,
not good enough.
You can't let people run at you like that. And restrict the opposition to long-range shots, perhaps, but not a free shot like that. Get a body behind it. So, you know, this annoyed me what Kit said when he said that they worked their socks off, because I think that there wasn't enough work. They needed to really chase the ball down a lot more, and I don't think he didn't quite get it right with the formation and the lineup again. Subtly, you know, I had 8 out of 11 right, I think, from what we said on Friday, one of which obviously was Parker that we weren't aware about, so there would have been 9. The other two were kind of by the by, having Hoogland or Grimmer at right back. It was going to be one or the other, I guess. The other surprise obviously the big surprise being for me, and we talk about the starting lineup, we can go into that, is that he started with Woodrow, when we all expected to see Matt Smith after Matt Smith's recent good form. And even when he hasn't been scoring, he's been looking dangerous.
Yes.
You've watched the match, and Woodrow, yes, he runs around, he's quite lively, he tries to do things, but both the central defenders for Brentford had him in their pocket. They were winning everything in the air. We didn't win a single thing in the air. And that was so apparent. And Woodrow was getting absolutely nothing that way. He was relying on ground service completely. And you saw when Matt Smith came on, suddenly, you know, he was winning the ball, he was winning free kicks. They didn't know how to deal with him. And that was a really, you know, obvious blip for me, that a blooper by Kit, because he should have known that they've got two good central defenders there. And say they were all over Woodrow. And Woodrow's not a short man. He's a big guy as well, really. And he's not bad in the air, Woodrow. But he got no change in them at all. So that was one thing that was the main sort of surprise for me in the starting lineup. The other one, obviously, because, of course, Park was out, I guess Fofana was the one who probably wouldn't have played. And we did play this 4-4-1-1, of course. As I said, I thought we might. Well, I said I'd like to see that, of course, but I did expect, of course, the Diamond to come back, and Brian Ruiz maybe, but not sure where he's gone. Maybe he's been away and was tired from international travel, or he's just given up as well. But they played this 4-4-1-1, but it meant that Fofana was wide with Kaká Nikšić, who, although Kaká kind of had a free role as well, because he was swapping left to right, and also and even sort of into a cam position at times. So he had quite a free run, Kaká, which is fine in a way, but in other ways, I mean, Fofana was having to kind of move from here to there, and Fofana was a bit stuck on the periphery, really, being out wide. I think I'd like to see him more central. And in the central midfield, although it was a 4-4-1-1 to a point, Guthrie was actually sitting quite deep, whereas Tunnicliffe was going on ahead of him. So it was almost, in a way, a mini diamond as well, like a very kind of wide, flat diamond.
Right.
Tunnicliffe was often getting forward, which was fine, but I think Guthrie was left a bit exposed, and you maybe would have expected Tunnicliffe to be the one sitting, protecting the back four, as he has done when Parker's not in the team. You also could argue the case that, you know, Fofana maybe should have been more central, and even like Tunnicliffe could have played wide to protect the fullbacks more. Because, you know, Fofana's not in the team to be a defensive midfielder to cover the fullbacks. He's there to kind of to run and create. So I'd
right.
like to see him perhaps more in the middle. So, you know, the lineup was not miles away from where I thought it would be. I did expect Guthrie to start, and I did expect Husband to start. But it was Corley Woodrow instead of Smith was the shot for me. And then also, just, you know, the Hoogland or Grimmer at right back, I was fairly ambivalent with that one. I thought ambivalent with that one because you could argue the case for either of them to play, really. But it was just also the way that, you know, Fofana was deployed on the right, and I'm not sure if that, or on the left for a lot of the game when Kaká switched over. And I'm not sure, because he was in a very wide position, whether that suited him. So, you know, all over, yes, most of the lineup was okay, but a few subtle differences for me meant that we weren't able to compete as well as we should have done.
Very good take there, David, on the starting 11. You know, again, we started just getting your opening thoughts, but it morphed into your thoughts on the starting 11. I appreciate it. I'm going to share my thoughts on the starting 11, and I'm not going to lie to you, David. When I saw the starting 11 and saw that Scott Parker was not included, I got real nervous because I go back to the show, like you had mentioned, and we knew how key he was going to be in this match. You and Mike both said, and it really played out that way. We missed him yesterday. I'm sorry. It's the truth. It's not an excuse. It's just the truth. We missed Scott Parker yesterday. I had a feeling it would be difficult against a side that knows how to play together. And again, you know, not that they're flashy or anything. Everyone knows their role. So when you're playing against a team that's really, you know, knows how to play with each other, and you're basically throwing a unit together that not everyone's on the same page yet, I think it can cause some problems. And not having that solidification of Scott Parker, David, I thought was huge. But secondly, and again, my big thing was Matt Smith, like you mentioned. I was very disappointed. Nothing against Corley Woodrow. I think Corley Woodrow gives us something, David. But Matt Smith, whether you like his style or not, he causes problems for the opposition, for those center backs. He causes all kinds of chaos. He does. He did in the second half when he came on. Imagine what he might have been able to do if he started the match. So that's my huge second guess, is Matt Smith. And that's what we're doing right now. You lose 4-1, you know, you're open to second guessing. So I'm going to go right there. I would have gone there anyways. I would have said Matt Smith, you know, was a mistake not starting him. And I still believe that, David. I'm not going to go back on that. I'm actually irritated that he didn't, because he's offered us so much. And why is he not playing? I know that stylistically there are fans that don't like Matt Smith. I get that. You know, again, he's not going to be someone that you're going to play this attractive brand of football with. But right now, David, it's about getting results. We're not safe yet. I truly believe Fulham will not be relegated. I believe that, okay? But you can't go in with that attitude. You still have to get the points. And Matt Smith, to me right now, is a player that could potentially help you get those points. So what is he doing on the bench? And I'm angry about it, sorry. I just am, because I thought it was a mistake. You know, there's not much you can do, David, about Scott Parker being ill and cannot play. I understand that. You know, you do what you can. But Matt Smith should have been playing up front. End of story. That's just my opinion on that. That's how I feel. Anyways, let's move on. Let's break down this match and just go through some key points of it. And I'm just going to start with you, David, and we're just going to start with talking about the first 20 minutes. Because the first 20 minutes, honestly, Fulham looked like the better side. I watched back the match this morning, and we were dominant in the first 20 minutes. We had a couple of opportunities to score. You know, again, nothing really clinical. I think that's the difference, David, is that one side was clinical and we weren't. And it kind of shows itself in the first 20 minutes. Kaká had a shot in the fourth minute. Colley Woodrow had a few chances in the first 20 minutes. I want to get your thoughts just overall on the first 20 minutes of this match. And was that a bad sign that we could not score in that period of time?
Well, it's always a bad sign if you don't make the most of your chances or positional play. And even all the way at half time, when you look at the stats at half time, you'd have said, you know, there's a bit of a robbery here.
Yeah,
you know, they were winning 1-0, and yet we were up on the stats at half time. So,
yeah. We'll get to that in a second, but go ahead.
Yeah, no, certainly the first half of the first half, we were most certainly the better side. But throughout the first half, really, you know, I think the scoreline was unjust, despite the fact that, you know, Brentford had. You know, they'd done their job. They'd sat back and, they'd kept us out where they needed to, and then they'd gone and pinched a goal as well. But, no, we had some great shots, and there was some good interplay, actually. And Kaká was involved with quite a few of these ones as well, so he was roaming around. Cawley, unfortunately, being Cawley, you know, he hasn't quite got that sort of precision, unfortunately. He had one shot that went over. Another shot he did hit quite well, but at the keeper. And this is kind of what we talked about before, you know, with the Matt Smith thing. You could actually argue almost the case, if you wanted to play Cawley, you should have played him with Matt Smith and either, you know, rest McCormack or play McCormack perhaps on this occasion in a different role because obviously the way we were. But, you know, I don't think that it was the right combination that they had. But nevertheless, you know, we did get fashion some chances, although there wasn't anything absolutely sort of clear-cut, as you said. It wasn't like we missed an open goal. But, you know, Kaká was wriggling himself free a few times. He was looking quite dangerous, actually, Kaká. I think it was one of the better games, really. It was just at the end, there was a few times, and, you know, I think he could have done better with the final ball. But his corners were even beating the near man as well, the first man. But, and, you know, we had all the corners in the first half. But, yeah, I know Cawley as well, and I think Ross put in a good free kick that almost we got on the end of it, I think. And then, of course, there was the Fofana chance, and I think it was going wide anyway, but it was helped wider for a corner as well, and that was a nice little ball that was played into him as well there. And there was some good you know, passing, and yeah, Guthrie did a few good sort of passes. He was fairly simple with it, Guthrie. He didn't try and be too extravagant. You know, he was trying to, I guess, play the Scott Parker role. He didn't have the energy and the kind of mad commitment that Scott does, I don't think. But he did okay, and, you know, some nice touches. And even Tunnicliffe, I thought, was, you know, had one of his better games, really. He was pushing forward. Again, with Tunnicliffe, it was perhaps the final ball sometimes that let him down a bit. But he had a bit where he got into the area as well, and he was just stopped by a last-ditch tackle. So it was really all at the Putney end where it was happening in that first, certainly the first 20 minutes and in the first half. And it was only really the goal that they scored, Brentford, that I can remember as being a real, you know, down the other end. I think they had a few kind of bits and bobs, but nothing where they had a clear-cut chance. Saying that, the style of the play in the first half for me was that Fulham were doing the pressing and it was Brentford who were trying to catch us on the break. And they did look very dangerous the way they ran at us. And, you know, the guy on the right, Iotto or whatever, he was cutting inside. And on the other side as well, they were looking dangerous running at us. And especially, I think, on our right-hand side, their left, obviously where the goal came from. I think a lot came through on our left, on their right. It was on the side where Grimmer and Hoogland were playing. First and second half, that they looked dangerous and they were getting running into the box a few times. But we dealt with it okay in the end. Obviously, Grimmer was hampered by, he got a foul on him, a late challenge on him, and he tried to run it off, but obviously he couldn't, and that's why he was changed at half time. That wasn't tactical as far as I can see. That was an injury based one. So we were forced to use one sub earlier than perhaps we could have planned, but no, first half certainly got to half time. Disappointing that we weren't at least level in the game.
Yeah, listen, I couldn't agree with you more, David. And, you know, you talked about a good amount, even more, of the first 20 minutes going into the rest of the half. You know, again, we pretty much have already touched on the goal by Stuart Dallas in the 24th minute. Again, he was not closed down well enough, and he just got it past Bettinelli. Again, just a well shot taken, whatever, you know, whichever way you want to say it. You know, again, it was a good goal, so you have to give him credit for that. What's interesting, David, the response was decent by Fulham right after that. Kaká had another shot in the 28th minute. Woodrow had another shot in the 34th minute. There are a few more opportunities for Fulham in the first half as well. Fofana, like you mentioned, in the 38th minute. Tunnicliffe had one right before the end of the half. So it's not like Fulham didn't have opportunities, but it's talk. You know, again, we're talking about, you nailed it. It's not just about making, you know, creating opportunities. It's how good you make these opportunities and how clinical you are with them. And it's about doing danger in the final third. And we just didn't do enough. And you know, to go to the half down 1-0 is a little bit of a kick in the teeth. And now, David, I'm going to just share the halftime stats. You've already talked about it, and I think they're going to paint a little bit of a picture for us. Now, possession wise, pretty even. It was 51% to 49% in favor of Fulham. Total shots, Fulham had 10. Brentford only had 6. Shots on target, Fulham had 5. Brentford had 3. The corners are what you just mentioned, David. We had 5. They didn't have any. Here's an interesting stat, David. Crosses. This is just in the first half. Fulham had 18. Brentford only had 5. Passing accuracy, pretty even. 75% for Fulham, 74% for Brentford. And fouls were even. This is just in the first half at 5 apiece. But, David, what are your thoughts about what I shared about just the halftime stats? I mean, for me, it kind of shows, you know, it is a little bit even, but I think Fulham should feel a little down. You know, again, you shouldn't go, you know, you shouldn't be devastated, but they should feel that they should have been at least even or even up in this match, but they were down 1-0.
Well, certainly. I mean, you know, we didn't really talk about the goal, actually, but for me, the goal, it came initially from Grimmer and Kakalic, which didn't really deal enough with an attack down the left-hand side.
Right.
And the ball came back out, and Guthrie and Bodaroff were there, and they both just stood back, and Stuart Dallas just ran and shot it. Not one of them attacked the ball, and that was, you know, that was poor. So, especially from Bodaroff and Guthrie on that one, but a little bit from Grimmer and Kakalic, because in the main, Kakalic played right and Fofana left in the first half. And Kaká doesn't really offer a lot of support for the fullback, which is the same old story that we've had all season, really. The fullbacks don't have a lot of support. But I think on the other side, we seem to cope a bit better for some reason. But no, that, you know, the halftime stats, certainly, I looked at it on my phone at halftime and I saw that we'd had 5 corners to nil. And I think that on the BBC one, I'm sure it said 55 to 45 on possession. And obviously,
okay,
we were up on the shots and things, and you know. So, yeah, no, it was pretty gutting. But I can see why you don't feel as outraged as perhaps you might do, because you've seen that, OK, we've had these shots and things. We haven't had a real clear shot, a danger shot. Yeah, the Kaká one was from a bit of an angle. The keeper had it covered. But Brentford, they did look very dangerous, and that was the fear that they would just walk through us, because there was just something a little bit lacking there, say the missing Parker factor, I think. And
yeah,
although, you know, I think we deserve to be at least level at the break, you could just see that there was that danger there, which is, they looked very dangerous on the break. They were quick, the way they moved the ball and used the wings. As we said in the previous show, they used their wings well. And they are, you know, it pains me to
they're
say.
They're organized,
they
David.
Are good, well,
David,
organized
David they're organized.
They are. They're a good, well-organized team. And, you know, and you look at this, and we had our best crowd of the season. You know, we weren't that far off capacity, not really, which is great for a championship match, okay, a local match. But, you know, look at the crowds that we get, and I know that was helped by Brentford on this occasion. and the resources we have, the resources they have, you know, and it just doesn't add up that how well they've come on and how far behind we really have fallen at the moment. And yes, we could have been level at halftime. We should have been level at halftime at the very least. But there was this kind of inherent danger that they offered and presented, and you saw how clinical they were. And on another day, I guess they wouldn't have had the same amount of luck. But still, you know, they got the ball in the back of the net. They capitalized on the chances when they came, and they
absolutely
took them as well as you can. And you know, they were once again economical with their chances. Whereas
that's right,
we're not. We're never. You know, when they're economical, obviously they, you know, they have a great conversion rate. Whereas we just don't seem to do that. Well, we, you know, how many shots did the keeper have to save, really, the Brentford keeper? That's the problem, once again. Although we had shots, and we had shots on target, there weren't that many that were real, you know, open goal kind of scenarios or one-on-ones, were there? They were fairly comfortable shots, I would say. So, half-time, yeah, we should have been at least level, but you can see that they presented a danger that, you know, we needed to be wary of.
Absolutely, David. And, you know, again, I think you really nailed it. You know, listen, Fulham can have more shots. They can have more corners. They could, you know, again, have a little bit more possession. But you just talked about the fear that you had watching this match. And when I watched it back, whenever they have possession, they look dangerous. I didn't feel the same way, unfortunately, when Fulham had possession. They just didn't look as dangerous as Brentford had when they had the ball. So, again, like I mentioned, they're organized. They're dangerous on the wings. They know what they're going to do. Everyone knows their jobs, and they just do it. And they, you know, they look like they're going to score. It looks like more of an effort for Fulham at this point to put it all together, David. And part of that, like you mentioned, is not having Scott Parker as a factor. And again, not having the game time with everyone together, all new pieces, you know, I shouldn't say all new pieces, you know, a few new pieces, you know, and everyone gelling together. It just has not come together. And I think we're seeing that. You know, I think we're seeing a team trying to figure it out. And I thought about this after the match, David, and I think this is simplistic, but I think it's true. One team knows how to win, the other team does not. Fulham does not know how to win matches yet. They are winning matches, but they're going up and down. They're going up and down, up and down. They haven't figured out the winning formula, and Brentford has. And you have to give them credit for that. You know, all it takes is a few opportunities, and they can capitalize on it. And Fulham, unfortunately, cannot capitalize on their opportunities. And that's why we are where we are, my friend. That's why they are near the top and we are at the bottom, or close to the bottom. I shouldn't say the very bottom, but we are pretty close to the bottom. All right, David, let's move on to the second half. And what's interesting here, watching the beginning of the second half, is, you know, I expected Fulham to come out stronger than they did. And I have to give Brentford credit, David. They came out stronger in the second half, and I'm talking about the beginning stages. And I was feeling that fear that you mentioned in the first half. You could see it again. And when I watched back the replay, they looked dangerous at the beginning of the second half. It's only 1-0 at this point. They were controlling more of the play. Fulham had some possession, but there's no question Brentford had more in the early stages of the second half. And, David, they get the second goal in the 58th minute. Stuart Dallas, again, makes it 2-0 on the left, like we've been mentioning. And again, a player was not closed down well at all, and the visitors take a commanding 2-0 lead. Talk about the second goal, David. This is quite a strike. I want to give Stuart Dallas credit. But again, it seems to me another situation where we just didn't close down well enough.
No, well, I mean, that's right. The second half, it was a bit of a same old, really. We have the two halves, and we go in at half time and we've done okay, but maybe not quite well enough. And we seem to get outfoxed at half time. Their manager seems to be able to say, right, this is where we've gone wrong. And they tighten up their show and they come out a better team, but we don't. We come out, you know, a worse team again. And we were under the cosh, most certainly. But the second goal, it was almost a carbon copy of the first goal, except that This one, he's hit it in the air. But it's from a very similar kind of position in the same kind of scenario. I mean, I think on the first one, there is there's probably a question, because I sat right behind it in line with Bettinelli and Dallas, where I'm sitting at the Hammersmith edge. And on the first one, it's possible that Bettinelli was unsighted a bit, that he didn't see it quickly enough, because perhaps if he'd have got down, because it was low, he may have got to it. But the second one, you know, he's hit it twice as hard and you know, twice as much in the sort of corner, really. But it was all from, you know, the same sort of position, not being closed down. And, you know, the half-time sub, which was made, and it was obviously for, you know, injury reasons, not tactical reasons, made no difference at all. If anything, we were more cavalier, because Hoogland seems to like playing further forward. So we really were kind of in that position, in that right-back position. That was a real Achilles heel for us, because Hoogland was going forward. And, of course, at 2-0 down, we're throwing people forward more and more to try and see if we can get back into the game, which I suppose you have to do, obviously.
Right.
But, you know, we have a certain naivety about us, and that, you know, the other team seems to be able to exploit that. But, no, you know, the second goal was just a classic they hadn't learned from the first goal. And, you know, and this is why I'm annoyed with what Kit said, you know, how they worked their socks off. If they'd worked their socks off, they would have been making sure they didn't do that again, for sure. You know, they would have been closing people down, and it just didn't happen. You know, it was all the way through the team, really. It wasn't just like that. Even up front, perhaps, we were letting them play the ball out a bit too much from the back. You know, and it's a good footballing side. They don't hoof it forward. They like to play out from the back, and, you know, credit to them again. But still, I think we needed to be closing them down more. But perhaps this is the downside of trying to play the wider game, the 4-4-2. We had less bodies centrally to do that. And so, you know, and they used the pitch much better than we did. So we're 2-0 down, of course, and now we are changing the game. And it's only at this point that Kit has decided, hold on a minute, Corley Woodrow's not winning anything in the air. We're hitting the ball forward. Let's bring on Matt
Smith.
And there'd already been chantings for him to come on before that. They'd been saying, Kit, make a sub from the Hammersmith end. And obviously then at last he came on. And I wasn't sure if he was going to take Corley off. I thought it was possible he might even take Fofana off, as he was a little bit out, you know, out of sorts, and do one of his usual efforts where he puts McCormack wide. Or even maybe Kaká. But Kaká was looking quite dangerous at times. So, you know, it was an obvious sub, but I wasn't absolutely convinced if it was going to be Corley that would have to make way for him. Because Corley did okay. It was just he wasn't there for the aerial threat. But, yeah, the sub was made. So, and then obviously we started to look a lot more dangerous, and we got back into the game.
We did, David, but there's one thing that I want to ask you about. And, again, they scored the goal in the 58th minute. In the 64th minute, I watched this on the replay. I did not get a great view of this, but Gentleman Jim was adamant that Andre Gray's shot, that he was this was flagged for offside. Again, I didn't see that, but because again, at this point, I had lost the audio feed, and all I saw were all these comments from Brentford supporters or media saying that he should have scored here. It should have been 3-0. But then I listened. Then I watched the replay, and Gentleman Jim was adamant that there was that the flag went up. Did you see a flag go up at this point? I believe that was on your end, correct?
No, they were attacking the Putney end second half, Brentford.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
So no, Fulham were attacking the Hammersmith end. I'm trying to think. I do remember there being an offside decision. I wasn't unhappy with it, but it's impossible for me to see from where
okay.
I am. As to, you know, I can get an idea at the Hammersmith end, although I'm not side on. I get a pretty good idea if people are offside or not.
Sure.
There was one as an example where the ball was played through, and it then came off a Brentford defender and fell nicely for Ross McCormack, and he was then given offside on the basis that he was already offside when the ball was played. Had he been onside when the ball was played, but then kind of went offside and was played through by the defender, he would have been onside, of course. But it was a good decision by the assistant ref on that one. And I could see that one clearly. So I get a reasonable idea if it's at my end. But at the other end, I've got no chance of telling if they're offside
or
not.
Okay, not a problem, David. I just thought I would ask because, again, he was pretty adamant about this. And I just remember on Twitter, you know, the all the tweets about, oh, it should have been 3-0. And then I watch it back, and Gentleman Jim is mentioning that it was actually offside. And it looked, actually, on the replay, it did look like that, too. So that's why I thought I would ask you. All right, David, let's get to the big part of the match, the 67th minute. James Husband gets fouled in the penalty area, and Fulham are awarded the penalty, and Ross McCormack scores to make it 2-1. Before I ask you about the actual call for a penalty, this is actually a very nice run in the box by James Husband. I have to give him credit, and I want to talk about him as we go into the match, because I thought he was a little bit of a difference maker. I thought he did a nice job in this match. But I want to get your thoughts on the penalty. Did you think this was the right call or a soft call or should not have been called at all? I'm just curious your thoughts on the penalty.
Well, again, it was kind of right in front of me. I had a great view, and I wasn't convinced, to be honest with you. I really wasn't, and the guy I was sitting with wasn't either. We both
okay.
thought it was a very generous decision. It looked like he's just kind of tried to hurdle a challenge or whatever, and he's just gone down. There hasn't been any contact with the player at all, and he's just kind of trying to take the ball past him. So obviously I was relieved to get the penalty. You're not going to say no, we're not going to take that. But I thought it was
right.
fairly soft. I didn't think it was a blatant penalty. But you know, you've got to take these. But credit to Husband, because he had been making quite a few runs down the left, and you know, surprisingly, he's actually playing with quite a bit of pace. He's getting in behind and getting to the byline a few times and getting crossed.
He has some nice crosses
too,
David, by the way.
Yeah. I've got to say, in terms of the attacking side of his play, I mean, defensively, it's hard to say on one game, but attack-wise,
right.
he did more attack-wise for me as an attacking left-back than Stafford has done half the season, to be honest with you. I mean,
I totally agree with
you. That respect,
totally agree.
In that respect, I was very happy with what he offered, the pace and the width and getting
yep.
behind, getting to the byline. Defensively, I didn't have a problem with what they did either, because although we've let four goals in, the first two have come from the other side. The third, obviously, again, was from a similar position, almost the same position as the free kick, obviously, was taken. And the fourth one has come in from that side as well. So none of the goals have come from his side, so I can't fault what he did defensively particularly. And I thought he did add something to the game. And if we're going to play, especially if we're going to be playing a narrower system at times, then you need a fullback who can do that. And that's what we've been lacking. So, you know, I thought it was an impressive debut by him. But I didn't really think it was a penalty. I have to admit, I thought it was a very soft decision.
Not a problem, David. You know, again, that's why I have you on, because I want to get your opinion on these things. But I also wanted to talk a little bit about James Husband. I'm looking forward to your rating on him, and also Danny Guthrie, two new players that came to Fulham on loan, and I think both made an impact. I think Husband made a more dramatic impact in this match, and you just mentioned all the things that we've been missing this season, and it's a very small sample. We're just talking one match, but offensively, I think he offered what we've been missing a little bit, and that was encouraging, and we'll see what else he can do the rest of the season. But yes, I totally agree with you. That's why the minute you said about James Husband offering more than what Stafford has in half a season, I couldn't agree with you more. And I'm there with you on that, because he stood out on that replay. He stood out a great deal. Like I said, he had some nice crosses into the box too. So it wasn't just his runs. It was also his ability to get the ball in the box. So I thought it was an impressive debut by James Husband. So since we're talking about this, at this point, I thought I'd mention that as well. All right, David, let's move on. And a few minutes later, Matt Smith had a great chance to score, and his shot just goes wide. Again, this was a long ball. This is, I guess you could say, a classic long ball up to him. And, you know, again, he floats a shot, I guess you could say, and it just barely misses. What did you see on this opportunity for Fulham?
Well, this is another part that impresses me about Matt Smith, really, because he actually is... For a big guy, he seems to have quite a good turn of pace. There's a few times we've seen him now, and he gets played a through ball or a ball over the top to chase, and he gets there first. You know, it's not a fluke, and he's just got there first, and he's done literally everything he could do. It's, you know, probably had he been a right-footed player, I don't know if it would have been slightly easier for him, but he's kind of taken it on the outside of his left a little bit to try and lob the keeper, and he's only gone just wide, you know, because the keeper's coming out. And so, you know, it's 90% there. It's just that, you know, these things, they're not easy to execute. I can't, it's not like he's missed an open goal. You know, he's missed a tap-in or something, or he's mishit it. He's done as well as he could do, really, there. He's just gone the wrong side of the post. But it's unlucky because he certainly did change things. And, you know, this is the thing. You said that people don't like Matt Smith. Well, I actually quite like him. I mean, I do too, David, honestly.
Player,
not as a person, yeah.
You know. No, I'm talking about as a player. I like what he's been able to offer for him so far. I'm serious.
Yeah.
I do.
I actually saw him with, I believe, his parents after the game. And I said to him, I said to the open window of his car, I said, actually, you were excellent. And as the pause came in, I said, as Doctor Who? And his parents burst out laughing, and so did he. And I'm sure he's never heard that one before, obviously.
I'm sure he hasn't,
if Matt Smith in South Carolina is listening, I did try and plug Matt Smith in South Carolina. I said to him, you've got a big fan over there. He came over to see you, and you went to Bristol City, unfortunately.
Yeah.
He just laughed. But, you know, I actually like what he's brought to the team, and I understand that, you know, Mike Gregg and things, you know, don't particularly favour the style of play that we sometimes will take when he's in the team. But it's not just about that. I mean, he has more dimensions to his game than just being a big man to lump it up to.
I think he's
useful on the ground. He's got enough pace to chase through balls, and
he's got a decent shot, David.
So, yeah, for me at the moment, he would be the number one choice to play as the main striker in every game, as far as I can see. I can't see any reason for him not starting, really, because
I totally agree with you.
Yeah, so this was what annoyed me, obviously, as you said, you know, at the game. So I don't hold anything against Matt Smith in this one. I think that he, you know, he was unlucky with that one. It was a difficult chance to execute. He's got into position and, you know, missed by the slightest touch, you know, slightly different touch, and it might have just crept inside the post. So, you know, unlucky for him there.
Absolutely. You know, and again, you know, I don't want to say that I'm a member of the Matt Smith fan club, but I just think that he has really offered Fulham something, and he should be starting the last six matches, period. He just should be, David. He gives us something. And, you know, I don't think he's that traditional, you know, big man like you mentioned. I think he has more to his game. And I like what he's been able to offer us. And he's dangerous, and center backs have a hard time dealing with him, David. He's a weapon in there. And I just want to see him play more, honestly. I want to see him start each and every match. All right, and let's move on, because we're going to be talking about him again. In the 85th minute, Ross McCormack played in Smith into the box, and it appeared he might have been fouled by James Tarkowski. Let me ask you, should this have been a penalty? And before you answer this, I do want to mention this to be fair. There was a couple of challenges in the box on Andre Gray. One I didn't think was a penalty at all. There was one that could have gone either way. So, to be fair, they had one that did not go their way. But I want to get your thoughts. Should this have been called a penalty?
Well, for me, it was more of a shout than the one that we actually got. But having got a soft one, I think it would have been total injustice, much as it would have been welcome, of course, had we got it. I mean, what's notable from this, though, is it was a great kind of bit of interplay. It was a great return ball by Ross McCormack. I had to be critical, he under-hit it by a fraction, perhaps. The ball didn't quite run through. It kind of got a bit stuck under Matt Smith's feet because it didn't run through enough. And it just enabled the defender to maybe get the challenge in. Had it had a bit more pace, I think Matt Smith would have just had that extra half a pace there. And had he been taken out, it would have been a clear penalty. But I had every confidence he was going to score there because he'd got in behind. It's just say the ball just didn't seem to run quite for me. That was again testament to the fact that Smith and McCormack seem to have this great understanding.
They really do, David.
He knew exactly where to play it, McCormack. He's a clever player. I don't think he had his best game by a long way yesterday, but he's still little things like that show me that, you know, these two should be our main striking pair, really. So, again, unlucky for Matt Smith. I'm sort of more minded to say it could have been a penalty, but it was a bit of a tangle of legs more than a clear kind of foul.
Right.
But having got one soft one, to get a second would have been would have been harsh, I think, very harsh. I mean, saying that, we had the Huddersfield situation. Incidentally, I spoke
right.
to Sean Hutchison after the game. Sean Hutchison said to me, yes, he did deserve the red card. He did hit his hand, which is credit to Sean Hutchison, because I thought when we saw the replay, it actually hit his shoulder. But he said, no, it hit his hand. So he said he hit his hand and, you know, he took it on the chin. And he said, you know, it was fair enough. That was one of those things. But, yeah, that was two kind of soft penalties, it seems, on the bounce there. So Sean Hutchison, good credit to him there for admitting that it hit his hand. I don't think it was a deliberate handball, as in the extent of the word. We stopped it blatantly, but, you know, it's a difficult call for the referee if it does hit your hand on the line and it prevents a goal. But, yeah, getting back to that, no, I would have been very surprised to see a penalty given for that Matt Smith one.
Okay. No, listen, I hear you, and that's why I also wanted to bring up the shouts that I saw on Twitter from Brentford supporters who were talking about, some of the situations, you know, again, or just, I shouldn't say Brentford supporters, just in general, about the Andre Gray situations, you know, just to keep that in mind, you know, I just see people tweeting. I don't know if they're fans of Fulham or from Brentford, but again, you know, that situation, you know, it could have gone their way and it didn't. So I guess you could say it kind of evens itself out. All right, David, I do have to share this because our friend, our co-host Mike Gregg, has responded on Twitter, and I want to share this because we were talking about Matt Smith.
We're being heckled. We're being heckled, aren't we, Russ, on Twitter now by Mike.
I just want to share this. To be fair to Mike, Mike tweeted this because we've been talking about Matt Smith, and this is what he had to say on Twitter. So, Mike, if you're listening, I'm going to share it now. This is our friend Mike Gregg said, I have never had anything against Smith. What I don't like is the footballer's instinct to just lump it to big men. McCormack, that was, R.E., McCormack, that was an understatement. Okay. So that's what he had to share about that.
He's referring, Russ, to the fact I said it wasn't his best game, I would assume. That's what he's obviously saying there.
Yes.
But,
yes.
You know, Matt Smith... No, I've never said that Mike doesn't like Matt Smith. Mike doesn't like that style of play, the long ball game. Mike likes to play the game on the ground, and it's just that Matt Smith is obviously associated with that kind of long ball game. But I think that was the initial impression we had of him. But since we've seen him play, we've seen that he has more to his game than just that long ball football. Obviously, we are going to still play that kind of style of football at times when he's in the team because he's useful at it. But I don't think it's just that about him, so... I think Mike, you can respond on Twitter if you want, Mike, but you're listening. I'm sure Mike will say that he's probably been more impressed with Smith than he thought he might be, if that's the right words. But please, Mike, feel free to respond to that as well.
and yes, Mike is just talking about Ross McCormack's game in general. And so just to emphasize that. Okay, David, let's move on. And now we're looking at the 85th minute. Oh, I'm sorry, right after the 85th minute, because we were just talking about that. 1 minute later, Tunnicliffe put the ball in the back of the net, but the whistle had gone as the ref called the foul, but by Matt Smith on the goalkeeper. Did you get a good look at this situation, David? I'm curious.
Actually, you know, I'm going to stand up for Matt Smith. I think it was actually a foul by Michael Turner initially. I think Michael Turner went up. Michael Turner went up with the keeper and he's given the foul. Matt Smith has actually, I think, won the ball clearly, but the ref would say that, one, they protect the goalkeepers anyway, but two, there was an initial foul by Turner that prevented maybe the keeper getting that. Obviously, it was obvious. There was a few people cheered, but the foul was already given before Tunnicliffe had hit the ball in the net.
Right.
Unfortunately, it's a shame, but you very rarely see the goalkeeper, not come off on top on these things. The referees are very protective towards the keeper.
I was just
but
about to say, do you think
Smith.
This was the right call?
Most certainly you always see these given, but probably, yes. I think Turner maybe was fouling the goalkeeper, but I don't think Matt Smith did. I think Matt Smith won it clearly.
Okay. Because it seemed almost like very bang bang, meaning it just happened real fast, and you know, I always look at does the player have a right to the ball? But like you said, these calls tend to go to the goalkeeper. And so the ref made the call, and, you know, like you said, right after that, then Tunnicliffe puts the ball in the back of the net. But it really doesn't matter because, again, you know, the foul had already been given, so it didn't matter. But, you know, you see the ball in the back of the net and you think you've scored, but obviously that's not the case. All right, David, let's talk about the very end of this match. Again, nothing positive to really add here. We're talking about goals in the 90th minute. I believe it's the first minute, and then a couple minutes later you have a goal by Alan Judge on a free kick who makes it 3-0, and then to add insult to injury, Jota scores at the very end of the match to make it 4-1. Talk about these goals at the very end, and, you know, again, both these goals were just sucker punches at the very end of this match and make the result look worse than I think it actually was. But, again, this is what happens.
Well, seeing as Mike is listening, I'd say that Hoogland didn't have his best game for us either, which I'm waiting for another response on Twitter. But Hoogland was pushing forward. As I said before earlier in the show, we were kind of quite weak the whole game along our right-hand flank. But and the guys come through there, and I think actually, from what I saw, Mike might be able to correct me otherwise on this, it looked that the Brentford player actually played it too far ahead of himself, and Bodoroff had the right to go for it. But Bodoroff by now was hampered. He was injured, and he obviously was late getting to the ball, whereas it's one of those ones, you know, where the people push it too far ahead and you think you can get the ball and nick it away. And normally he would do that, but refs had judged it to be a foul. It was a well-taken free kick. You can't take anything against them, really. And,
right.
You know, saying that, they had one from a similar place in the first half as well, very similar position. And Bettinelli was absolutely stranded in the one in the first half. I think had it gone the other side of the post, they would have scored from it. Because Brentford in the first half put their own wall next to our wall, and Bettinelli was quite to the left of the goal, and the ball was headed to the right as Bettinelli stands. And I think they would have scored, if you remember that one as well, went alongside the post. But this one, he's got it dead right. It's gone literally top corner. Bettinelli couldn't do a lot with that. It was, you know, you don't want to be giving free kicks away in that situation, but more often than not, obviously, you don't concede a goal from a free kick like that. You know, not everyone's got brilliant free kick takers. We certainly haven't normally, but well taken free kick, and obviously it's annoying because at 2-1 this was straight after the obviously the Matt Smith situation up the other end, wasn't it, and things. So we had a chance where we could have almost made it to 2-2, but of course we're then 3-1 down, and then of course, you know, add insult to injury, ball in from their left, our right, again, same position,
yep.
all four goals from that side.
Yep.
And again, he's hit it nicely, he's connected nicely, but, you know, it's just a real slap in the face, isn't it?
It really is, David. And I just want to share this from Mike. He has chimed in. Bodoroff took him out. It was a foul, but he did it because he was injured. Hoogland, no idea where he was. Thank you, Mike, for chiming in. I really appreciate our friend Mike Gregg. He is excellent. We're lucky to have him as part of the show. Seriously, David, you know that. And Mike always has some great things to say. Always has some great things to write about too. All right, David, why don't you do this? I know that you have to dial out and then dial back in.
Yep.
While you do that, I will start our stat attack and looking at the full time stats.
Okay, I'm going to phone Mike up and heckle him very quickly, but and I'll be back, okay?
Not a problem. All right.
Cheers.
All right, while David dials back in, I'm going to share the full-time stats with everyone. And, again, possession for the full-time stats. Fulham were at 47%. Brentford were at 53%. Total shots were even at 16 apiece. Shots on target, Brentford had one more than Fulham. They had 8, Fulham had 7. Shots blocked, Fulham had 3 blocked, Brentford had 4. Shooting accuracy, Fulham were at 44%. Brentford were at 50%. Passing accuracy, Fulham were at 73%. Brentford were at 79%. Key passes, Fulham were at 14. And Brentford were at 12. Crosses, Fulham had more, 24-17. As we go through this, crossing accuracy, Fulham and Brentford were tied there at 12% apiece. Fouls, Fulham had 11, and Brentford had 14. Offsides, Fulham had 2, and Brentford had 4. And David, I know you just dialed in. I don't know if you had a chance to look at the stats, but I'll just go through them real quickly. A couple of interesting ones for you. Key passes I just mentioned. Fulham had a couple more, 14-12 in crosses. Fulham had 7 more, 24-17. Possession was 47% to 53%. And this is an interesting stat, David. Total shots, as I just mentioned, were tied at 16 apiece. And Brentford only had one more shot on target, 8-7. So what jumps out to you from the full-time stats?
Mike's avoiding me. He sent me to voicemail. He doesn't want to talk to me. I did try to heckle him back, but...
Okay.
No, the stats, seriously, yeah, the stats still... When you look at the stats, perhaps, if you weren't at the game, you think, well, it's pretty even. You know, we should have got a point there, really. And it certainly says that 4-1 is an unfair scoreline. But when you look at the actual match, if you were there and you saw their potential to be dangerous and how clinical they were and how wasteful we were in the final third, you start to think, well, it's not as wrong as it seems on the face of it. You know, look at this game. I mean, we have some weird ones. The Leeds match and the Huddersfield match were kind of both, the stats went completely against the final scoreline. And in this one, yeah, the stats appear to do so, but, you know, we had this fragility again, you know, this frailty, the inability to sort of stop crosses, especially on that right-hand side, and also, you know, closing people down. And we were much too wasteful. You know, I can think two good opportunities near the end where, on our right, both times, where Tunnicliffe and Kakanicic have failed in good positions. Tunnicliffe could have rolled the ball across to Matt Smith. And I think that was actually the one right before the third goal, if I remember right. That's the one I was actually referring to, where they've gone and got the free kick for the third goal. Tunnicliffe has cut inside, and Matt Smith was there. And he had to roll the ball across, and Matt Smith to side foot home, hopefully. But he's then tried to take the last man on, and he's kind of on his left foot, and he's hit it very weakly, Tunnicliffe. And there's also Kakanicic in the same position. He's beat his man and onto his left foot, and he had to float it to the far post where Matt Smith was waiting, and he scuffed it and hit it to the near post. And that was like kind of endemic of the situation. There were lots of situations like that where we've crossed it poorly. Not every cross was poor. I think our crossing was better than it has been. But remember, for more than half the game, we didn't have the presence of Matt Smith in there anyway. And,
right.
And I think the Brentford centre-halves did a good job. So it was the final third where the differences were. They were much more clinical than we were.
Right.
And also, they just played together as a team. They had a better shape. They used the ball better. So the stats, perhaps a little bit misleading. I don't think, you know, you could really say we deserved a point from that. Much as you want to say that, you know, much as you want to, as a Fulham fan, say, yes, we deserved a point, I don't think you can say we deserved a point. Maybe 3-1. Yeah, and Mike's probably upset because that was his prediction, I think, wasn't it?
It was.
That very late goal robbed Mike of a clean sweep there, but yeah, it was even a 2-1 defeat would have been kind of more palatable and justifiable on that. I think a draw would have been, you know, great for us, but I think Brentford would have felt very hard done by.
No, it's a good analysis. You know, I think you analyzed this match very well, David, and you know, I'm not going to come on here and say Fulham deserved the point. Fulham deserved 3 points. That would be false. Brentford deserved all 3 points. End of story. And either 2-1, like you said, or Mike Gregg's 3-1 prediction is more accurate, because it is about being clinical. It is about scoring. One team takes advantage of their opportunities, another does not. End of story. And it hurts to say that. It hurts to lose to, you know, in a derby match against against a side down the street, you know what I mean, in the same area, not literally down the street, but fairly close, and was really looking forward to this match. That, you know, again, if you know, I was on Twitter. If you would have seen Twitter after the match, David, it was, you know, I'll use an analysis here. It was like Brentford won the Super Bowl here. And I understand it. I understand that, you know, they should feel good about themselves. They should. They've had a great year, and they should feel good about themselves. But, you know, if you're a Fulham supporter, you should be upset at your club, upset at your team, because you should not be losing 4-1 to Brentford. End of story, David. They should not be losing 4-1 to Brentford. They shouldn't be losing, period, to Brentford. But this year they do. They've lost twice. It's embarrassing. Okay, sorry. It's embarrassing. And I'm pretty upset about it. All right. Let's move on. I needed to get that off my chest. I needed to get that off my chest. Sorry. Cuz I'm ticked off, David. I'm ticked off that you know, again, I'd like to do a couple shows in a row. Would it kill Fulham for me to do a couple shows in a row after victories? Come on. Yeah, because it's really all about me. I'm just kidding.
One thing that you got to say though, Russ. Yeah. Yes, maybe it's embarrassing, but on both occasions, Brentford deserved their wins.
Absolutely.
Know,
no.
Much as it
again,
hurts,
I'm not
know.
Taking anything away from Brentford. They deserved
it. And it just, again, we go back to what we said before. It's fantastic on their small, relatively small resources, how well they've done, what a good team they've got together there.
Absolutely.
And it just, it's galling. The embarrassment is that we can't get anywhere near that. It's not so much the embarrassment that they beat us. It's the embarrassment that this is a season-long problem for us, isn't it? It's not just Brentford.
That's the point. See, David, that's the point about all this. That's the point because, you know, again, I think you just nailed the real embarrassment. It's not about losing to a team that's having a good season. It's losing in the manner that they have all season long. The season has been one big, giant disappointment. It has. There's no way to, you know, there's no way to sugarcoat it. It's one big embarrassment, and I'm just fed up with it. I'm really tired of it. I'm trying to put a good face on this. You know, I'm a positive guy, and they're making it very hard on me. You know. It's very difficult to find silver linings, to look at good things. The one silver lining that I can come out of this is that I do see some talent on the team, and some young talent too. That's a good thing. But they just cannot figure out how to put it together. This has been a lost season. A rebuilding season is what we would say here in America, David. It's a rebuilding season. It's all about next season. We need to get through this season. We need to get safe. Get through the season, and make sure that next season is not like this season, because this season has been downright horrible. All right. Now I've completely got that off my chest. I want you to rate the players. I'm sorry, David. I've wanted to get that off my chest for a while, so hope you don't mind.
That's okay. No, that's fine, Russ. I mean, unfortunately, I'd love to say it was a rebuilding season, but I'm not sure what we've actually built, you know. I don't see many foundations at the moment for, you know, to build upon. I can just see next season being the same. And I know I'm the pessimist or you're optimist, but
You are, and I disagree with you there. I think that there are building blocks. I just don't think that they've figured out how to put them together yet, that's all.
All I can see really is another change of manager, change of personnel once again, and next season, you know, perhaps being like this one, unless they find the right formula. That's what scares me about it.
Okay, well, I'm gonna put my positive spin right now on this, David, and then I want to move on. I'm gonna make a prediction to you right now.
No.
Okay, here's my prediction. Okay, and I'm not afraid because I actually believe this. One, we're not going to have another season like this next year. I truly believe that because I do see the talent there. I don't know who the manager is going to be, so that's a major problem. But I don't see the owner of Fulham Football Club wanting to go through another season like this. So I expect change, but I expect them to build around a core of players that they believe in. I also expect Fulham to be promoted next season, and I expect to meet you at Craven Cottage at the match that they get promoted. That's my prediction right now. And
okay, just hope,
okay Russ,
I hope
shut up now,
promotion.
Russ.
I'm hoping it's not promotion from League One back to the Championship.
Yeah, there you go, David. There's good old David's negativity coming right through. I love it. All right. We have to get going, David, because I want you to rate the players. So let's start with Marcus Bettinelli.
Right, for me, I can't blame him for any of the goals. I don't think there's a lot he could have done, really. First one, I think he was unsighted. Second one was a good shot. Third one, again, top corner. Fourth one, I think they're all given up by them, but you know, the guy had a free shot, hit it well. So I'm not going to blame him for any of those things. He did make a couple of smart saves apart from that. A good claim on one cross, I remember. But once again, some of his kicking was a bit suspect. There was a few, and both keepers actually, to credit, you know, both seem to be putting out a flare a bit too much. But I'm going to give him a 6.5, so slightly better than just a bog standard one.
Okay, good stuff. All right, David, let's go to the back four. Let's include the combination of Grimmer and Hoogland in there, because Hoogland came on at the half, so I want you to do the back four, but actually make it now five. So let's talk about Hoogland, Grimmer, Nikolai Bodarov, Turner, and Husband.
Okay, let's see if I can remember that much. Right, Grimmer, I know Mike's listening, so here we go. I wasn't overly impressed with Grimmer, to be honest with you. I know he was hampered towards the end of the half by an injury. But, you know, again, it's who's in front of him and supporting him. And I know at times he had Kaká there, who's not the strongest player. But when you look at it, most of the danger came down that side. I don't think he was good enough defensively. And he certainly wasn't good enough going forward. Some of his passing wasn't good enough. So I'm only going to give him a 5. Sorry, Mike. Hoogland, well, it was just, you know, if Grimmer's defending was bad, Hoogland's was non-existent, really. I know he likes to push forward. But I can remember one occasion he's completely sold himself as well. I just, you know, I had my head in my hands. And I like Hoogland, and I wanted to do well, but I don't think he particularly added anything. You know, if anything, he was worse than Grimmer, so I'm going to give him a 4 out of 10, Hoogland. He was absent most of the time. Bodarov, I thought he was okay in the main. He was hampered by injury at the end. I can't really blame him for conceding the free kick because he was struggling there. Perhaps, you know, as I said before, maybe they should have taken him off completely or just put him up front and rearranged things because it was a bit of a hindrance him being there. I'm going to give him 6 out of 10 because I think that he was okay, but no more than that. Actually, not. I'm going to knock a point off. I've decided that. I've changed my mind because he was one of the ones who didn't close the first shot down, so I'm annoyed with that, actually, because he's normally good at things like that. So I'm going to give him 5 out of 10, actually, so... Sorry, I have the right to correct myself sometimes, yeah?
Sure.
Turner, I mean, again, you know, I thought he was solid enough without being spectacular. Most of the stuff tended to be more on the right-hand side, so less of a problem for him. I didn't see anything particularly outstanding, but I didn't think he seen anything awful, so I will give him 6 out of 10. Husband, now, he was, for me, the only real kind of... bright spark from the defence as such. I was very impressed with him. Yes, it's only one match, but defensively I thought he handled Jota pretty well, or Jota, however you pronounce it. Hotter probably, isn't it, like that? Pronounced pretty well. I noticed Gentleman Jim we still had Hoogland playing or whatever he's called. But,
yes.
I thought he did pretty well, Husband, for a debut. It's always hard coming into a team. You know, he hasn't been there very long to get to know people. I thought he linked quite well with the others. But what impressed me was, you know, getting forward. You know, he played with pace, he got to the line, some good dribbling and trickery, and some good crossing at time. And I think in a bad defensive performance, he was certainly the shining star for me. And actually, he's my man of the match because he won us the penalty for the goal. So I'm going to give him 8 out of 10.
Excellent. Excellent, David. Usually in a loss like this, I think it's ridiculous to give man of the match. But honestly, I agree with you here, and I'm gonna take that back and say in this case, I think Husband deserves man of the match even in this 4-1 loss. I thought he was excellent. All right, David, let's now go to the midfield. Let's talk. You know, I'm definitely curious your thoughts on Guthrie, Tunnicliffe, Fofana, and Kaká, but especially Guthrie.
But I thought Guthrie was, you know, he was pretty tidy. He did, you know, he tried to keep things simple in the main. I probably expected him to be a bit more physical than he was. I don't know if he was, you know, getting back into things. It's hard. Maybe he didn't want to get himself sent off first game like everyone else seems to do sometimes. But, you know, I thought he used the ball fairly well. Some nice touches. And there was in the second half, there was an excellent ball for, I think it was for Kaká, actually. He played an excellent through ball for Kaká that Kaká should have probably done better with as well. So I would probably say I'd give him 7 out of 10, but he's the other accomplice in the opening goal. Both him and Bodrov were in the same position and both stood there and let Dallas shoot. So I'm going to give him 6 out of 10 because I'm annoyed, because that's where it all started for me. You know, perhaps if we hadn't given that a goal away, who knows what would have happened. So 6 out of 10, not a bad score, but would have been better had he closed down on that goal. And you know, maybe second goal as well. I didn't get a good view on that one, but he was in the same sort of position, so maybe him and Bodrov were also a bit complicit in that one. So that's for that. Tunnicliffe, I actually was quite impressed with Tunnicliffe, although I think he should be maybe offering more protection to the back four. He did play with a lot of energy, got forward well. Certainly one of his better games for us, I'd say. But as I said to you before, you know, there was perhaps a little bit lacking of quality at the end there. Should have done better. Certainly where he should have squared it for Matt Smith in the last few minutes and he's tried to take the man on and scuffed it straight to the goalkeeper. So that disappointed me there. But I'm going to give him 6.5 because I think he played with a lot of energy and he was up for it. Some nice, you know, some nice tackles as well. There was one I remember seeing on the 2-minute replay and I quickly watched that earlier. Great little tackle which led to a chance for us. So 6.5 for me. Would have been 7 if he'd used the ball better. Fofana, I think he was wasted out wide. Didn't get in the game enough. More dangerous when he's played more centrally. Doesn't really like offer a lot defensively for me either. He does come back, but he's kind of, it's not really his game, I think. I think he'd be better. He would have been better in the middle having a run at them, I think, bursting from midfield. So, had that one shot when he came in on the right, but he wasn't getting that much service, really, to get forward. Not for me, anyway. Not awful, but 6 out of 10 for me. Kaká, I thought, looked quite dangerous. Again, questions about the final third and the final ball. But when he ran at them, he caused a few problems on several occasions. Got into some good positions, both for crossing and for shooting. You know, and he actually, probably one of his best games, I think, for a while, really. Just, again, disappointed with the final ball. I was very disappointed, actually, he was taken off, because I thought, although some of his final balls wasn't quite there, you know, we were chasing the game, we were 2-0 down. He replaced, you know, Kaká with Cavani, who's a more defensive player, which is a bit of a strange move for me again there. I'm going to give Alex the benefit of doubt here. It's probably be a 6.75, but I'm not going to go that way. I'm going to give him 7. Give him 7,
okay. Yeah? Wow, you give a real Mimi kind of analysis there, David.
No, I've got to leave Mimi to do her to do what she does. I don't want to steal her thunder too much, so I'm just going halves at the moment, yeah?
Can I just say this about Mimi? And Mimi, if you're listening, happy Passover, by the way. But Mimi is, you know, again, she does not hold back, David, on her analysis of Fulham Football Club. I love when Mimi can join us because she's very open, very honest, and you don't want to get on her bad side because she'll let you know how she feels. I'm talking about as a player. If you don't play well, she's gonna let you know. She's not afraid to voice her opinion. I'm a big fan of Mimi Mirowich. I just want to mention that, Mimi, if you're listening. All right.
With one exception, Russ.
With what exception?
She won't ever say anything bad about you-know-who.
Okay. Well, I mean, you know, yeah, okay. Well, that's one player that she happens to really, you know, really think highly of.
I know. I've noticed.
Okay. Okay, good boy. All right, David. You know, can I just say this seriously? I've enjoyed doing this show. This has been like therapy. You know, this really has been like like doing this show with you today has been like a full therapy, honestly, to get this all out.
I'm glad I managed to talk you out of not doing the show.
No, you know, and I got to be honest with you, David, I don't have any problem with you mentioning this. I was seriously considering scrapping this episode today, and because I actually had a listener message me and say, you know what, you know, maybe you guys shouldn't do one because of the results. And I thought about it, like, you know what, maybe we shouldn't. And you actually, you know, I wouldn't say talk me into it, but you knocked some sense into me. And then after watching the match today, I realized it was more of a knee-jerk reaction for me, David. I'm glad that we did this show today. I'm glad that we do this show even when we get hammered and lose, because it's, in a bizarre way, it's therapeutic getting it all out, for me at least. All right, let's move on, and let's now talk about the strikers up front. I am going to include Matt Smith in there, because he did play a good portion of the second half. But let's start with Colly Woodrow, Ross McCormack, and then I want your opinion on Matt Smith.
Colly, you know what he provides. He puts in a lot of effort and work, right? But he's relying a little bit on service, but he's also reliant on his own accuracy. And he didn't quite have his own accuracy there. He had one, say, reasonable shot that the keeper smothered, but otherwise a little bit wasteful when he had chances, but he didn't have many chances because, as I said before, when we played the high balls, I don't think he won a single ball in the air. They were mopped up by the Brentford central defensive pair. So for me, he didn't really get in it enough. He did put the effort in, but the end, you know, there wasn't enough kind of play for him, and there wasn't enough end product from him. So I'm giving him 5.5, and not awful by him, but you know, you need strikers to be more dominant, I think. And you know, that was a big boo-boo by Kit, in my opinion, as we talked about, not to start with Matt Smith, really. Like Colly, and I think he's got a great role at the club, but that wasn't the right time to play him yesterday. McCormack, oh my God, here we go. Where'd you go with this guy? Because you saw some brilliant flashes from him yesterday, and you saw some frustration.
Yep.
You know, he's always involved, he's busy, but there's times when you want to pull your hair out, and there's times when you think, my God, he's the best player that, you know, we've signed. Because he has this kind of, this style, this work rate, but at other times, he's just so frustrating. He'll, you know, run into someone and be looking for a foul, and he'll just say, get up and get on with the game, for God's sake. Not, obviously, enough from him. He didn't really get many chances in front of goal. Yes, he scored the penalty, obviously, so you have to give him credit for scoring a penalty. Took it well. Couple of good deliveries from free kicks. Great little reverse pass through there for Matt Smith. But in other ways, as captain, I expected more from him. So Mike's going to say that I'm well over the top, but I'm going to give him 6 out of 10.
Okay.
You know, he scored a goal, and he's tried to create chances, but he needs to be doing more, especially as captain and with his reputation. So 6 for me. Matt Smith, I think, you know, he was exactly what we needed. Just it was 58 minutes too late, or whatever it was, 60 minutes too late, 64 minutes too late, maybe.
Yep.
He really did cause a problem for them. And he won. If he didn't win it in the air, it was probably because he was getting fouled. And he won free kicks for that. And he just shook things up, you know. He had a couple of chances to score, which, you know, he got into the positions. He just caused them issues that we weren't causing before. Okay, there wasn't an end product from him as such. He was very unlucky near the end as well with that ball. I think it was from Husband as well, wasn't it? Husband slid it across the box, and it just eluded Matt Smith there. He was sliding in. So I'm going to give Matt Smith, I'm going to give him 6.5, actually, because I think, you know, without an actual goal or final product as such, he did do everything else that he could do. And had he scored a goal, obviously I'd be rating him higher.
Okay, good stuff there, David. And I'm glad that we could end talking about Matt Smith. And obviously, there's not enough time to rate Kavanaugh, so I'm not going to ask you to do that. But I wanted to get your thoughts on Matt Smith, because that's going to lead me to now have you rate Kit. And I think that's a factor for me in rating Kit, was the fact that Matt Smith came off the bench and I thought should have started. But I'm curious your overall rating for the full manager.
Well, he's, you know, he has caused some embarrassment to us, or the result has caused some embarrassment to us. And, Kit, you have to, like, aim it at him. He's picked the team. Okay, he hasn't gone out there and played, but he's picked the team, and he's made a big boo-boo in not picking Matt Smith. You know, I think we said before we wanted him to play, and in hindsight, we wanted him to play. So there's no real argument against that. I think Kit was wrong there. He's made a mistake there. You can't, obviously, the Scott Parker thing is by the by. I did say Hoogland to play at right back, and he's picked Grimmer. And to be honest with you, you know, Grimmer, if anything, was the better player from what I saw. So
right.
You can't argue with that one. But the big one, again, for me, the substitutions. Why on earth did he bring on Sean Kavanagh, an effectively a defensive-minded player, and take Kaká off? And Kaká looked quite dangerous when we're chasing the game. You know, what on earth was going on there? You know, I know he rates Kavanagh, and Kavanagh has looked useful, but for me, it was a poor move. He might as well have thrown on Hugo or someone. He might as well have just thrown caution to the wind at that point or done something else or just left it as it was, really. And as it was, of course, we needed that substitution because, you know, Bodoroff got injured and, you know, at least he could have brought Byrne on, which would have delighted a few, I know. And we would have had 11 fit players, hopefully, at the end. So that one was an unnecessary substitution, most certainly. The Matt Smith one was totally necessary, but it shouldn't have happened because he should have been on from the start. So for Kit and then for Farner out wide, I don't know really about that one either. Didn't really work for me. And just in general, a team that weren't as organised as the opposition. Okay, we've got, you know, more and more of the team are lone players, it seems, at the moment. It's just, well, Ashley Richards wasn't there as well. It would have been even worse. But what sort of cohesion is there? So, Kit, I'm afraid, I don't know. I'm going to do a meme, actually, here, I think. I've just got to do it just for the fun of it, because I said I wouldn't do it. I'm going to do it.
Okay.
I'm going to give him 3.33 recurring, or 3 1/3 in old money, yeah?
Okay.
So, I'd say 1/3 you got right and 2/3 you got wrong.
Okay. I kind of like that analysis. And oh, by the way, check your Twitter feed. That's all I'm going to say. Check your Twitter feed.
Who's having a go? Is Mike having a go again?
I'm not going to say.
Well,
just
yeah.
Check your Twitter feed. no, and I actually do like that analysis. That's a very good analysis. On Kit, I'm not going to do or say what we said before. Give him a zero, but. But 3.33, yeah, I can see that, David. That's
recurring.
That's very good.
Yeah.
What was that?
Recurring, obviously, 3.33
recurring, yeah.
Recurring, yeah?
Yeah, I like that. I do like that. All right, David. Now, this is interesting because, again, we've been talking a little bit up about Brentford, and I want to give them credit. I definitely do. And I think what you saw, you know, is, you know, again, two totally different sides. One looks very well organized, and they've had a very good season. One whose side has not been organized at all, not playing together as a team, and one is near the top of the league, and the other one is at the bottom of the league. So I'm curious what your rating is for Brentford in this particular match.
Well, you know, I think this rating is more for what they've achieved this season as well as yesterday. But they've come and they've done their job absolutely right. They've been organized. They've kept us out when they needed to, really. The penalty, obviously, you know, you can't odds that. I thought it was a soft penalty. But I'm going to give them 9 out of 10 because their shooting was brilliant. They, you know, they've taken all the chances that they've had, really.
Four great goals.
If only we could shoot the ball as well as that, you know, and use our chances. And they look dangerous. Every time they attack, they look dangerous to me. So 9 out of 10.
Absolutely.
I think a good team, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, I agree with you, David. They are a good team. It pains me to say that, but you have to give credit to them. You really do. And, you know, again, it hurts, you know, and I know how many people are upset by this, about losing to Brentford, and so am I. But, you know, I got to be honest here, and you have to give them credit. you know, you just have to give this side credit. They were good yesterday. They've been good all season, so you got to give them credit. I know it's, I don't want to, but you have to. At least I feel like I have to. All right, David, let's go to the ref. Rate the ref.
I thought the ref was pretty good as well, actually. Obviously, not the fact that he's given as a soft penalty. That's not clouding my judgment. I thought that he was lenient. There was a couple of tackles early on by Brentford, fouls that, you know, one on Husband, that could have been yellow cards, but he's decided to give them, you know, a talking to. The ones that he has given, there was the one that was on Guthrie near the end was quite a bad one, actually. That was almost a borderline red. He's given them a yellow card. So he was lenient, but I thought he was consistent. I thought he refereed in a low-key way with, you know, he had a good authority, though, good control of the game, played the advantage pretty well, I think. So I was happy with the way he refed. I'm not going to argue about the penalty that wasn't given because, as I say, we got one that I thought was a bit soft. And I've been generally impressed when I've seen him. He's three times he's refed, and I think he's been a good ref. So I'm going to give him 8 out of 10.
Okay, very good. Very good. Very, you know, again, it's a difficult one because, you know, we have some controversial calls, but I understand where you're going on this, David, and usually a pretty good judge when it comes to the refs, so I'll take that. All right, David, we only have a few minutes to go. I do want to mention this, that our next show, I don't know if you're aware of this, David, but I have some interesting news to share with you, but on our next show, which you and I will be, I'll be hosting, you'll be co-hosting, co-hosting with us will be one Giannis Giannis. So it will be me, you, and Giannis to preview the Charlton Athletic match. So I thought you would like that. So just wanted to mention that. That should be interesting on Monday. You, me, and Giannis will be doing that. That'll be 6 p.m. in the U.K., 1 p.m. for me and Giannis. But we'll be doing that, my friend.
That's good. Is Mike suspended then for heckling or something?
No, Mike is not suspended. Mike actually just sent me over the times that he can do the show. Unfortunately, Mike can only do them just a couple of shows, and you know, unfortunately, it won't be on Monday. But that's okay. I want Mike on whenever he can do it. But we have a couple of shows left in the season. Mike will be joining us, but he won't be joining us on Monday, David. But listen, we got about 2 minutes left before we go. A couple of things I want to mention. Number one, David, I want to wish you a happy Easter tomorrow, and everyone listening, I want to wish you all a happy Easter. If you're listening to this today or on Sunday, please, everyone, happy Easter. I want to wish my friends and fellow supporters that are Jewish a happy Passover. I'm Jewish, so I'm enjoying my Passover, and I want to wish anyone that is Jewish a happy Passover. So, anything else you want to add, David, before we leave here? We got about a minute and a half left.
No, I'm not going to do anything religious, but I hope everybody has lots of lovely chocolate that they enjoy anyway.
Okay, fantastic. That's a good thing. And I lastly just want to wish everyone a very wonderful weekend. And let's just forget about this. And David, we've done this show now, and I'll say something that the coach of the New England Patriots usually says after a bad loss is we're on to the next opponent. So we are now on to Charlton Athletic. We'll be doing that show on Monday. I look forward to doing it with you and Giannis. So let's wrap up this show of Cottage Talk Extra Time. For David Holly, I am Russ Goldman. Thank you again for listening to Cottage Talk Extra Time. Cheers, David.
Cheers, Russ. See you. Goodbye.
Boys.